that we are at that time of year that commemorates Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America, which was a very momentous event and the beginning of a tremendous inundation of the world with Krishna consciousness. For the first time, at least in recent times, outside of the borders of India. And Srila Prabhupada had the conviction from the very beginning that anyone could take to Krishna consciousness. There was a stricture or rule that a sannyasi or swami should not go outside the borders of India or should not cross the ocean. And there is a logic to it that people outside India, across the ocean, are very fallen. And if a sannyasi associates with them, he can be contaminated by their association. And actually it has happened that over the years, saintly persons, sadhus from India have come and been, rather than influencing the Westerners to adopt Vedic culture, they themselves have been influenced by Western culture. Srila Prabhupada tells the story that when he first came to New York, he met a swami from the Ramakrishna Mission who told him, Swamiji, now you are in America. You will have to wear a suit and tie. And you'll have to learn how to eat with knives and forks, sit on furniture. And Srila Prabhupada replied, I have not come to learn these things from the people here, but I have come to teach them to forget all these things. So, only someone extraordinarily powerful could do what Srila Prabhupada did, could even imagine doing what Srila Prabhupada did. But this fact that anyone from anywhere in the world, from any culture of the world, can become a pure devotee of Krishna was recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam thousands of years ago. And so I thought to honor this occasion, I would read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that formed the philosophical basis of what Srila Prabhupada did. So we'll read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 18. I will just recite the verse, but when we come to the synonyms, we can chant responsively. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kirat Hunan Rapulend Pokasha Abirashumba Yavana Kashadaya Yanye Chapapa Yadapa Shraya Shraya Shudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha Kirat Hunandra Pulinda Pukasha Abirashumba Yavana Kashadaya Yanye Chapapa Yadapa Shraya Shraya Shudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha. Please repeat. Kirata.
Kirata.
A province of old Bharata. Huna. Part of Germany and Russia. Andhra. A province of southern India. Pulinda. The Greeks. Pokasha. Another province. Abira. Part of old Sindh. Shumba. Another province. Yavana. The Turks. Kasha Adaya. The Mongolian province. Yay. Even those. Anye. Others. Cha. Also. Papa. Addicted to sinful acts. Yet. Whose. Apashraya Ashraya. Having taken shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Shudyanti. At once purified. Tasmai. Unto him. Prabhavishnave. Unto the powerful Vishnu. Namaha. My respectful obeisances. Translation. Kirata Huna Andhra Pulinda Pokasha Abira Shumba Yavana. Members of the Khasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, due to His, the Lord's, being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. He begins the purport describing the different names mentioned in the verse. Kirata, a province of old Bharatvarsha mentioned in the Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata. Generally, the Kiratas are known as the aboriginal tribes of India. I won't quote every detail from this portion of the purport for the sake of time. Huna, the area of East Germany and part of Russia, is known as the province of the Hunas. Andhra, a province in southern India, mentioned in the Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata. It is still extant under the same name. Pulinda, it is mentioned in the Mahabharata, Adi Parva, 174-38. This country was conquered by Bhimasen and Sahadev. The Greeks are known as Pulindas. And it is mentioned in the Vanaparva of Mahabharata that the non-Vedic race of this part of the world would rule over the world. This Pulinda province was also one of the provinces of Bharata, and the inhabitants were classified amongst the Kshatriya kings. But later on, due to their giving up the Brahminical culture, they were mentioned as Mlechas, just as those who are not followers of the Islamic culture are called Kafirs, and those who are not followers of the Christian culture are called heathens. Abira. It is mentioned that this province was situated on the river Saraswati in Sindh. The modern Sindh province formerly extended on the other side of the Arabian Sea, and all the inhabitants of that province were known as the Abiras. They were under the domination of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and according to the statements of Markandeya, the Mlechas of this part of the world would also rule over Bharat. Later on, this proved to be true, as in the case of the Pulindas. On behalf of the Pulindas, Alexander the Great conquered India, and on behalf of the Abiras, Muhammad Ghori conquered India. These Abiras were also formerly Kshatriyas within the Brahminical culture, but they gave up the connection. The Kshatriyas who were afraid of Parasuram and had hidden themselves in the Caucasian hilly regions later became known as the Abiras, and the place they inhabited was known as Abiradesh. So I'll pause for a moment to make one point here. The verse explains that anyone from any part of the world, any culture of the world, however addicted he or she may be to sinful acts, can be delivered by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, because of the Lord's being all-powerful. Now, from this description of the history of many of these provinces, we find that they were formerly under the Vedic kings and followed the Vedic culture. But because they disregarded their culture, they became fallen and placed in the category of Mlechas. So this is a warning to people from the Vedic culture that just as people from other cultures can become devotees, people from Vedic culture can become machas by neglect of the Vedic culture. And we see this happening, unfortunately. We see this happening very commonly. I remember one year, Tamal Krishna Goswami and I flew from Delhi to Bombay. And, you know, we were sitting in the baggage claim area. And in that whole big flight, which was full, there were only, I mean, I think there were probably 200 or more passengers, maybe one woman wearing a sari. There were maybe a few wearing shalwar kameez, Punjabis. And the rest were wearing slacks. Yeah, jeans. A lot of them were wearing jeans. And Tamal Krishna Goswami, he commented about how the Vedic culture is being lost. And even more recently, there was a cover story in Time magazine. And it showed, it was like a woman divided in half. And the one half showed her like with the tilak and, you know, traditional Indian hair and jewelry and dress. And the other half was showed her, you know, head uncovered and sitting with a headset, you know, taking a phone call. And the article was about how, you know, India is becoming a center for information technology and so much is being outsourced to India. And, you know, you call any company, any big company, you could end up being talking to someone in India. And maybe Indradumya Swami was visiting me at that time. And, you know, he saw that cover and he was actually very sad. You know, he said the way things are going in India, what we know of India won't even exist in a couple of generations.
It's already gone.
Yeah. And that was one of his main motivations in taking his festival to India, because he felt it would be a tremendous loss for the world if India ended up being just like any other country. That whole precious culture and unique contribution that India was meant to make to the world would be lost. So that's sort of implicit here, that if a non-Vedic person can become Vedic, then a Vedic person can become non-Vedic. Anyone can come up, but at the same time, anyone can go down. I'm thinking of this one family in Dallas, but like in our generation, our parents were very upset when we became devotees because they didn't understand it to begin with, and you know they didn't like it. And now, I mean, I'm giving this example of one family there. I'm sure there are many others. The parents, they are of Indian origin, but they weren't that spiritual. But by association with devotees, they become devotees. And their daughters, who, you know, studied at very top institutions on the East Coast and have big means lucrative positions in financial institutions on the East Coast. They're like worried about their parents, that their parents are becoming too involved with Krishna consciousness. It's like everything's reversed. Everything's reversed now. Okay. Sumbas, or Kankas, the inhabitants of the Kanka province of Old Bharat, mentioned in the Mahabharata. Yavanas. Yavana was the name of one of the sons of Maharaj Yayati, who was given the part of the world known as Turkey to rule. Therefore, the Turks are Yavanas due to being descendants of Maharaj Yavana. The Yavanas were therefore Kshatriyas, and later on, by giving up the Brahminical culture, they became Mlecha Yavanas. Descriptions of the Yavanas are in the Mahabharata, Adi Parva 85-34. Kasha. The inhabitants of the Kasha Desh are mentioned in the Mahabharata Drona Parva. Those who have a stunted growth of hair on the upper lips are generally called Kasas. As such, the Kasa are the Mongolians, the Chinese, and others who are so designated. The above mentioned historical names are different nations of the world. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are all corrigible. What does corrigible mean? No. It means they can be corrected. Like, say there's an unruly child who can't be corrected. He's incorrigible. He's like, he's hopeless. You know? So corrigible means he can be corrected. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are all corrigible. They can be corrected, they can be reformed to the standard of perfect human beings if they take shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Now, when Srila Prabhupada arrived in America, there were no devotees. So all of this transformation that we've seen in our own lives and in the lives of so many others really came from their taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada. It began from their taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada and then taking shelter of those who took shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Jesus Christ and Muhammad, two powerful devotees of the Lord, have done tremendous service on behalf of the Lord on the surface of the globe. And from the version of Srila Shukadeva Goswami, it appears that instead of running a godless civilization in the present context of the world situation, if the leadership of world affairs is entrusted to the devotees of the Lord, for which a worldwide organization under the name and style of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has already been started, then by the grace of the Almighty Lord, there can be a thorough change of heart in human beings all over the world, because the devotees of the Lord are able authorities to effect such a change by purifying the dust-worn minds of the people in general. The politicians of the world may remain in their respective positions because the pure devotees of the Lord are not interested in political leadership or diplomatic implications. The devotees are interested only in seeing that the people in general are not misguided by political propaganda, and in seeing that the valuable life of a human being is not spoiled in following a type of civilization which is ultimately doomed. If the politicians, therefore, would be guided by the good counsel of the devotees, then certainly there would be a great change in the world situation. By the purifying propaganda of the devotees, as shown by Lord Chaitanya. So Srila Prabhupada had a disciple named Pradyumna, who was Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor. And he was a very, he was personally trained by Srila Prabhupada, but he was very learned. And over the years, he studied many books by previous acharyas, commentaries by previous acharyas. And when I met him a little while ago, he commented that one thing that was very distinct about Srila Prabhupada was that he related the verses of the scriptures to the world situation, and saw them in terms of effecting global change. Generally, if we read the commentaries of the previous acharyas, they will tell us how we can apply the principles of bhakti yoga to attain spiritual perfection, to attain Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal service of Krishna, Radha and Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada, he had the idea, and of course it was coming through Parampara, through his Guru Maharaj to some extent, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he applied the same principles on a global scale. He envisioned what the world situation would be like if the principles that were generally followed by individual persons or families were actually followed by the society in general. And he formed the In God We Trust party. There should be another party that's different from all these atheistic, well, they're not exactly atheistic, but they're not really spiritual either. In one talk, Srila Prabhupada, you know, because they consider themselves religious, but Srila Prabhupada said, if you do not know who God is and what he wants, then what is the meaning of this so-called religion, religiousness? Or so, I mean, who really does know who God is or what he wants? Practically no one. And therefore, there's so much chaos in the world, and it seems to be, well, I can't say worse than ever, but it's definitely very bad. I mean, all over there's violence erupting, and the, what is it, ISIS, or?
Islamic State. ISIS.
ISIS. I mean, they're, if they could, they would expand their dominion over the entire planet and just finish anyone that's not not only not Muslim, but not their particular type of Muslim. And then in Ukraine, and then, yeah, Israel, Gaza, just so. But Srila Prabhupada, he was thinking that if on an individual level, like Chaito Darpito Marjanam, if our consciousness as individuals can be purified by chanting the holy name, then the same principle would apply on a large scale. That if people in general chant the holy names, then their consciousness will be purified. And they won't, they'll become humans. And they won't fight like cats and dogs. Srila Prabhupada would comment that, because he would go by the United Nations after he arrived in New York, and it's supposed to be uniting the nations, but he said they're actually becoming more disunited. The flags are multiplying. And we see it everywhere, that there was one country, then it's become two, and then three. And it's not you being united, it's being disunited. Because they are missing the central point, God. And they're identifying with the body. Like, say, Ceylon or Sri Lanka. Anyway, there's, because I've traveled a lot, I know like what happened in so many of these places and how things really got bad. I'll just give the example of Sri Lanka. I met so many old people there who said that that island was like a paradise. There's actually a science fiction writer, Arthur C. Clarke, who chose to live there. It was like such a nice place. And there really wasn't any problem between the Tamils and Sinhalese. Because the medium of education in the schools was English. So they were all united in classrooms. So I don't remember the details of the political parties and who the leaders were. But obviously it happened in one election, one party won and the other lost. And then the party who lost thought we should run on a platform to make Sinhalese the national language. They know appealing to that sort of bodily identification. And then the next time around, they won. Because the majority were Sinhalese. Yeah, we should have Sinhalese as our national language. And then the Tamils naturally reacted, well, we don't want our children going to school and learning Sinhala language. We want them to learn our language, Tamil language. So then there were then the whole country became divided. Like the Sinhala schools and the Tamil schools, instead of going to school together, they were separated and, you know, developed prejudices against each other. And just on and on. So this basic fact that we're not the body, like the first lesson of the Bhagavad Gita, that we're not the body, we're the Atma, or the soul within the body. Just that understanding alone would revolutionize the lives of people and the whole atmosphere. As His Holiness Jai Dwaita Swami said, that, you know, the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness, like you're not the body, you're the soul, which is eternal. Things we've heard 100 and 1,000 times, or 10,000 times, or 100,000 times. things that we've heard so often, you know, I've heard this before, we sleep through it when we hear it. He said those basic points are so revolutionary to ordinary people that it can totally transform their lives. And the world's climate. So these are really very powerful points. So, as Shukadev Goswami began his prayer by discussing the word yat kirtanam, that's earlier in the same section, so also Lord Chaitanya recommended that simply by glorifying the Lord's holy name, a tremendous change of heart can take place by which the complete misunderstanding between the human nations created by the politicians can at once be extinguished. And after the extinction of the fire of misunderstanding, other prophets will follow. So that's the first Chaito Dharpana Marjanam. The consciousness is cleansed. Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, the blazing fire of material existence, is extinguished. And then there are so many benefits, seven benefits, but beginning with just extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence, the whole situation will change. And then the other benefits, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, increasing the ocean of nectar that we're all hankering for, those follow. And after the extinction of the fire of misunderstanding, other prophets will follow. The destination is to go back home, back to Godhead, as we have several times discussed in these pages. According to the cult of devotion, generally known as the Vaishnav cult, there is no bar against anyone's advancing in the matter of God realization. A Vaishnav is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnav, even the Kirata, etc., as mentioned above. And who showed this practically? Srila Prabhupada. A Vaishnava is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnava, even the Kirata, etc., as mentioned above. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.32, it is said by the Lord that there is no bar to becoming a devotee of the Lord, even for those who are low-born, or women, Shudras, or Vaishyas. And by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord who has thorough knowledge of the transcendental science of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the only qualification is to take shelter of a pure devotee. Once when Tamal Krishna Goswami and I were serving in Bombay, during Srila Prabhupada's presence, Tamal Krishna Goswami decided to have a hernia operation at Jaslok Hospital, which was the best hospital in Bombay at the time. It was new, and it was opened by a good friend of ours, a very charitable man. But when Srila Prabhupada heard about it, he wanted to stop the operation because he didn't trust the medical treatment in India then. He wanted Tamal Krishna Goswami to have the operation in America. And at that time, it was different. I mean, now, at that time, it was very hard even to get a telephone in India. And then if you got it, it was not guaranteed that it would work, that the lines would work. So Srila Prabhupada could not get through to the hospital to tell Tamal Krishna Goswami not to have the operation. So he decided to drive all the way from Juhu to central Bombay. And at that time, for a long time we didn't have any vehicles of our own, but at that time we had a Mahindra Jeep, which was the old kind, like, you know, the side was open, there was like no doors, and it had like a canvas. And Prabhupada got in this Jeep to drive down to the hospital. But when he got there, it was too late. The surgery had been performed. And Tamal Krishna Goswami was being wheeled out of the operation theater, or the recovery room. And he was just coming to consciousness from being under anesthesia. And, you know, he opened his eyes and saw Srila Prabhupada, and he said, "Srila Prabhupada, I just was dreaming about you. And in the dream, you were giving a report to the previous acharyas. What is the situation on earth? How is the mission going on earth?" And as Tamal Krishna Goswami told Srila Prabhupada, that you were telling them that the people on the planet Earth now have no good qualities. They have no pious background. They have no knowledge of Vedic culture. They have no interest in spiritual development. All in all, they have no qualifications for spiritual life at all. But they do have one qualification, and that is that they have faith in me, and whatever I tell them, they do. And that qualification alone is enough to bring them to Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And then, you know, Tamal Krishna Goswami looked towards Srila Prabhupada like it was a dream. You know, is it true? And Prabhupada nodded that, yes, it is true. So that is stated here. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone from any part of the world who become... Now listen to this. This is like going a step further. Listen to this carefully. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them by purification of heart. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava. So, it's the same idea. That beautiful phrase that Sukadeva Goswami uses. Apashraya ashraya. In other words, taking shelter of the devotees. In other words, taking shelter of those who have taken shelter. And so anyone from any part of the world, however sinful he may be, can be purified by taking shelter of a pure devotee. who's well conversant with the science of Krishna. And then Prabhupada says, anyone from any part of the world who takes shelter of a pure devotee of Krishna and learns the science from him can in turn become a spiritual master and give shelter to others from any part of the world. And we see that this is also going on. And thus the parampara is continuing and people are becoming purified and making advancement. Now, we may take some of these things for granted, but when Srila Prabhupada was prosecuting the Krishna consciousness movement, he had many enemies. He faced much opposition from people who felt that you cannot become, say, a Brahmin, unless you're born in a Brahmin family. We had this discussion with one of our hosts in Madras. And his idea was that to be considered a Brahmin, you have to take birth in a Brahmin family. He admitted that we are Vaishnavas, and that Vaishnavas are better than Brahmins, but we're not Brahmins. To become Brahmins, we have to take birth in Brahmin families. So that means that if this were true, or if this idea prevailed, practically none of us would be able to worship the deity, because we're not born in Brahmin families. And that, you know, that would be a great loss for us personally and to the movement. So at that time, four of us had come to Madras, and we were staying with this person. And one of them was Achyutananda Swami. So Achyutananda Swami said to our host that what is more powerful, the holy name of Krishna or sinful reactions? So he had to admit that the holy name was more powerful, because all the scriptures say that you can be free from sinful reactions by taking shelter of the holy name. So then he said, then, and how is someone born as a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or Vaishya or Sudra or none of those even? It's by their past pious and sinful activities. So if the holy name is more powerful than sinful reactions, that means it can eradicate the effects of sinful reactions, which can, for example, include being born in a, quote, lower, end quote, family. And he could not say anything. He could not say anything. But still it went on and on and on. Especially in South India, there's a constant. Some Brahmins came to meet Srila Prabhupada in Hyderabad, Andhra, and you're doing the greatest disservice to the Hindu religion by making these foreigners Brahmins and sannyasins, what to speak. And but Prabhupada, he was relentless. He was not trying to win a popularity contest. I mean, yeah, he was the most popular with Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not with the people of the world. Of course, he tried to attract them, but the world is such that there are going to be people who rebel against pure devotional service to Krishna consciousness. So, yeah. But so, in that way, sometimes Prabhupada could be very gracious and pleasing. Like, again, some Brahmins in South India, they like complain to Prabhupada that your disciples don't pronounce Sanskrit properly. Prabhupada said, that's why we have brought them to you, so they can learn how to learn from you how to pronounce properly. So he, according to the situation, he would deal. But he would not compromise. That was the basic point. And because of that, we are here today. So, anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them by purification of heart. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava. Systematic contact. That's him. Adosha tata sadhu sangha, regular association with devotees. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnav who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste or Varnashram Dharma is no longer regular even amongst the so-called followers of the system. In other words, the Brahmins, not just Brahmins, everyone, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, even the Sudras are not proper Sudras. So the Varnashram system is not regular even among the followers of the system. So what is the point of, you know, claiming, you know, we're Brahmins and you can't be Brahmins? In 1977, I think, Prabhupada was in Juhu, and might have been Jay Prakash Narayan. Anyway, he had a big gathering, sort of like Gandhi used to do, like some lakhs of people. And the idea was that the Brahmins, he was like, you know, it was also sort of a political maneuver, but, you know, that to obliterate the exploitation of the lower classes by the Brahmins. So he had this huge meeting, and then the Brahmins came forward, and they were like taking off their sacred threads and putting it in a fire, bonfire, something like what Gandhi would do. So when Prabhupada heard this, he said, good. They're admitting they're all Sudras. So the system of caste or Varnashram Dharma is no longer regular even among the so-called followers of the system. Nor is it now possible to reestablish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted into the Vaishnava cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental process. So by the order of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Bhagavad Gita, can be preached all over the world, reclaiming all persons willing to accept the transcendental cult. Such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive. In other words, any impartial sane, inquisitive person. Without any particular bias for the custom of the country. The Vaishnav never accepts another Vaishnav on the basis of birthright. Just as he never thinks of the deity of the Lord in a temple as an idol. And to remove all doubts in this connection, Srila Shukadeva Goswami has invoked the blessings of the Lord, who is all-powerful, Prabhu Vishnave Namaha. As the all-powerful Lord accepts the humble service of his devotee and devotional activities of the Archana, his form as the worshipable deity in the temple, similarly, the body of a pure Vaishnav changes transcendentally at once when he gives himself up to the service of the Lord and is trained by a qualified Vaishnav. There are many statements to this. Diksha Kale, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami, Diksha Kale, at the time of initiation, Krishna accepts the devotee to be as good as himself, and his body is transformed. It's no longer considered the same. And so therefore, I mean, these designations don't apply to a Vaishnava. That's a very important point. Very important point. The injunction of Vaishnava regulation in this connection runs as follows. Arche Vishnu Shila Dir Guru Shu Naramatir Vaishnava Jata Buddhi Shri Vishnu Namni Shabda Samanya Buddhi. One should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple to be an idol. I mean, you look at it, it is stone, it is metal, but it's not. Because the Lord is all powerful, he makes it spiritual. Or it becomes a manifestation of the Lord himself. Nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man. Not the same thing. He's an ordinary man. He's a man like you and me. He sleeps, he wakes up, he uses the toilet, he does everything we do. He's just an ordinary person. He's a human being like the rest of us. But no, there's a difference. And, so one should avoid seeing the spiritual master in terms of the common bodily functions that are shared by all human beings and even other species. But one should see how he's serving Krishna and preaching. So one should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple to be an idol, nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man. Nor should one consider a pure Vaishnav to belong to a particular caste, etc. Padma Purana. The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites. And he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord, who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. So, who could paraphrase what I just read? How Lord Chaitanya, presented himself. And if by chance anyone knows the Sanskrit or even a few words of the Sanskrit, because it's a very important principle and a very important verse. Well, that is the essence. That's true. That is the essence. That's the process. I'll just read it again. He himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life. Naham vipra. I'm not a Brahmin. I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm not a Vaishya. I'm not a Sudra. I'm not a Brahmachari. I'm not a Grihastha. I'm not a Vanaprastha. I'm not a Sannyasi. But that he is the eternal servant of the Lord, who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan. Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Dasa. And actually much of this purport and much of Srila Prabhupada's writings are actually verses paraphrased. In other words, Prabhupada thought in terms of verses, but he had such deep realization that it sounded as if he was just speaking, you know, from his own realization. I found that so many times he would say things, and then later, as I read more, I would say, oh, that's exactly what Srila Prabhupada said. Yeah. That is the way of self-realization. So to be self-realized, we have to give up all these false designations and accept our true identity as the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And by being connected with that line of servants, parampara, we realize who we actually are and can taste the true nectar of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yes? Please.
Could you tell us about Amazon? I did write for many years. You mentioned one little girl one time in India. What does Prabhupada have that other sannyasis do not have? And my answer after that has become like, what if we have Krishna? And then making that reference, that little girl that they have gone to, I think it was in Madras.
Yes.
I think that was very sweet. It's so true. I mean, if you analyze that thing, yes,
okay. So in Madras, the Chief Justice of the High Court arranged a program on a grounds that was attended by other High Court judges and High Court advocates. And then afterwards, he invited Srila Prabhupada to his home, Prabhupada and his disciples to his home for prasad. And so Prabhupada was sitting on a chair, and, you know, the disciples were sitting on the floor. And the chief justice gave Prabhupada like a little silver Krishna. And in the program, like a Pandav program, Srila Prabhupada had spoken about the six Goswamis, how they had left their lucrative positions and aristocratic positions and joined the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And, you know, directly or indirectly, he was calling upon these leaders of society, Mandala Patithis, big High Court justices and advocates to join the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then at the Chief Justice's home, he picked up that theme of the six Goswamis from the Sadhu Goswami Asana, the prayers to the six Goswamis. So he held this little silver Krishna statue. So all the disciples were pretty much in our early 20s, maybe one or two or a little older. So one of the older couples, they had a little daughter named Saraswati. And she was, maybe 4 years old. And so Prabhupada held this little Krishna in front of her. And, you know, she was at that age, like she was looking at it and really sort of captivated. And then he moved this statue away, and then he hid it behind his back. And she didn't know where it went. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh no, he didn't say, at first he didn't even have to say anything because she was looking. And Prabhupada said, where is Krishna? And she was like looking, and she was like looking here and there, looking amongst the disciples, and she couldn't find him. And she was filled with so much anxiety. And that's really the mood we have to develop. We have to have so much anxiety for Krishna. Where is Krishna? And that was the mood of the six Goswamis. And then, she couldn't find the deity, and maybe sort of gave up or half gave up hope. And then Prabhupada again said, Saraswati, where is Krishna? Again, like that anxiety, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? Then Saraswati's mother, Malati, gave her a hint, let's say. And Saraswati, who has Krishna? And then immediately Saraswati's face brightened and her eyes opened wide, and she said, Prabhupada has Krishna. And then she ran forward to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada took out the deity of Krishna from behind his back and placed it in front of Saraswati. It was a very profound demonstration of an essential spiritual truth. That when we have that anxiety to see Krishna, Krishna will reveal himself. See means not for our sense gratification, but see so that we can render service. And also that, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that, Ohe Vaishnava Thakur, we're talking about taking shelter of Vaishnavas, Ohe Vaishnava Thakur, that you have Krishna, and you have the power to deliver him to me. And therefore I'm running behind you, shouting Krishna, Krishna. So yes, it is a beautiful story, and it's also very relevant. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right, so what is next?
Arti.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.